Welcome to another episode of Scientology Fair Game. I'm Mike.
Hi, Lily.
Hey, so we have an interesting show.
We do.
Yeah.
This is exciting, actually.
All right. Well, go ahead.
Something different.
Well, don't insult 65 of our prior shows.
That's not insulting them. It's just saying
they're not interesting.
Something a little
and exciting?
Different.
Okay, something a little different. Why don't you go ahead?
A little different.
And introduce our guest today, Mike.
Well, we have two people with us today. One of whom has become kind of a mini celebrity in his own right, Ian Rafalco, who posted a TikTok video about his father, Scientology chiropractor Eric Berg. And I'll let him tell us the story about that. And his friend, who was a staff member at a Scientology organization in New York for a number of years, Dylan Follow. Welcome, Dylan and Ian. It's wonderful to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be able to talk to you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to be here. It's very, very surreal.
I know, because people have tweeted me and Mike 100 times going
so many times.
Have you seen this guy? Have you seen this guy? Have you talked to you guys should really reach out to this guy. And I don't want to say like we have because I don't want to out people who don't want to because Mike and I talk to a lot of people who we don't talk about on the air or tweet about. Just so people know, but go ahead, Ian. I want you to tell people your story and how you guys are connected.
Right. So, essentially, the connection with my father is just something I can get out of the way. He's like,
he's your father.
He's my father, and
that's how you're connected. I was going to talk about you and Dylan, but your father and Dylan, your dad had sex with your mother.
Well, I meant because he's like his own little keto celebrity person. And Dylan and I trained at Flag together. So I was on staff in Atlanta a few years ago. I think it was like 2017. Okay. And I was sent to Flag for training. And,
so you were a Scientologist your whole life?
Oh, so I was born into Scientology. I have two older siblings and they've been Scientologists since like almost 6 years before I was born.
Okay.
So I grew up in the DC org in the Fraser Mansion, and I grew up, all these is very weird and kind of hard to remember, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
I, around my teenage years, kind of just, tried to distance myself from it, but then I was sort of shoehorned back in by some circumstance, and I can talk more about that. But my parents became kind of OLs, opinion leaders in
Scientology.
In Scientology, because my dad.
I'm going to basically say to why you how you become an opinion leader in Scientology is by donating money.
Of course.
Just period. Definitely, you could be shit fucking human being, which most of us were. But if you're donating millions of dollars to Scientology, you are humanitarian. Go ahead.
Yeah, and if you have a lot of followers, then you're on Scientology's radar.
Okay. Sorry, my dog just opened the door and walked in. Hi, babe.
A talented dog.
You gotta go, Papa. Don't be annoying. Yeah. Okay. He just saw somebody prettier. He prefers my assistant, by the way. Like, if it's between us, he goes to her. He saw her and just literally just left. He was like, oh, fuck you. Somebody better came along. Go ahead. Sorry.
Go, Louie.
Yep. Go ahead.
My dad started follow. He had like a following of his own on, in the keto community for his whole diet stuff. And he's a chiropractor. He's no medical licensing to speak of, but he gives a lot of his opinions. Not many I agree with, but he has like over 5 million followers on YouTube or subscribers on YouTube. And so I was always, there's Dr. Berg's son. Oh, are you Dr. Berg's son? Getting stopped in the hallways of Flag. And it allowed me to meet people that I otherwise wouldn't have been able to talk to.
Because your dad was a big donor.
Right. And my mom My mom, funny enough, she actually did more in Scientology than my dad, but my dad was more popular. My mom's actually...
He was giving the money.
Yeah. She's right. Like the OT committee chairman for the Americas.
So just to decode some of this, FLAG is the Mecca of Scientology, the FLAG land base in Clearwater, Florida. And OT means you've just reached the top of Scientology's bridge.
Right.
Where you supposedly have superpowers and could do things like change the course of a hurricane.
Do we it on the basis that you're assuming people, like just covering bases just in case there's new people?
Oh, because not everybody knows the terminology. And, right. And you know, listen, I knew Scientologists that didn't know the basic terms of Scientology, couldn't define it. So I'm certainly not going to assume that our listeners right. and people who are very loyal to us, the aftermath and this podcast are just going to go, OT yeah. means yes, yes, yes. So I always try to decode it to the annoyance of Mike, but I do it anyway. And well, to the annoyance of a lot of our listeners who basically say the same thing, like shut the fuck up, Lee, and let people tell their stories. But go ahead.
Well, it does sound like gibberish to outsiders too.
Yeah.
So it's
well, it is gibberish.
I mean, so in that case, I can sort of shift my explanations a little bit because I've had a lot of experience with talking about this story, just maybe not in, you know,
code.
Yeah,
in right. Scientology's fake language. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's there, and there is so much. It's hard to even
understand.
Start. But so I, you know, through my whole life, I was just kind of Dr. Berg's son, and I would go to the events, and I would go to the, you know, the fundraising events, bored out of my mind, run away from those events to go play Indiana Jones in the CF. And the central files, basically these big filing cabinets with those roller.
You mean the the area where the confidential folders are kept?
Yes.
Of people's transgressions and confessions and deepest darkest secrets? Yeah.
I ran in there. I think I was like 5 years old or six. And there's
Mike,
a bunch of us.
I mean, if he could do it, Mike, why can't the FBI?
I mean, they just didn't use the right back door. I mean,
exactly.
You just walk in like you own the place.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
Top notch security.
Whose folder is this? So let me see what this one's been up to. Yeah.
And we would, I mean, to the best of my memory, we were just making fun of the situation of the countless hours we were just in this empty, building with nothing to do. So those two filing cabinets or these central files cabinets, you'd roll them and you'd roll these little wheels and they'd start moving close to each other. And we'd start at the back and we'd run towards the front and we'd see if you can get out before they squish you.
Great.
Completely unsupervised.
I mean, maybe Child Protective Services wants to take a look too. I don't know. Go ahead.
I mean, but so it's very like just discarded sort of very lonely childhood, especially when I'm kind of surrounded by people who as an adult, I'm surrounded. Most of the Scientologists that I know weren't born into it.
Right.
And they have that sort of like prior foot on which to push from and then fall back on, even to be like, okay, well, I was in that and I can step away. But like when you're born into it, actually recently, I mean, the effects have just been really not good. And the more I look at sort of the reality of the situation, the worse it gets.
Sure.
But I have distractions and I, it's really crazy. I never wanted to be a staff member until I, you know, it just looked like a really boring job and the hours looked really harsh. I was just fine being a public, someone who does Scientology external of its management. And I, and it was fine. I was kind of just like being moved around, you know, you're kind of just being moved around to these different people and, you know, you're there every day. I think I started, my initial services at FLAG, like my survival rundown, which is an auditing process or certain counseling that you do with another person. So they have these big rooms, massive. They, I think like 6 or 7 of these. Wait, how many course rooms were there, Dylan, at Flag?
On like the fourth floor,
was like a,
there was like 13, I think.
And then, there's absolutely massive course rooms. There's granite ceiling. There's a mountain somewhere with the largest, with a like a giant block cut out of it, because there is no like.
It's really immaculate, actually.
It's, I mean, it's the cleanest building I've ever been in my entire life. It's just that's done on purpose.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
So I started my services there, and then I it wasn't really working out for me work wise in Florida, and I just gotten out of a bad relationship. So I think I was about I was 20, I think, and I moved to Atlanta to live with my sister, who was on staff in Atlanta at the time. And I was told that if I moved there and did courses at the org, the Atlanta org, I would be, they would think about, you know, helping me out of this financial rut,
right.
You know, because my whole life it's, I mean, they didn't really have money until I was like a teenager already. Mm-hmm. But in my entire life, it's always been like, you know, we made our money, so you're going to make yours. So, you know, if I wanted something.
But it was contingent on you being a Scientologist.
If I wanted
Scientology services,
I wanted to go to if I wanted to go anywhere as like a teenager, I had to write a formal CSW and send it to my mother for her to consider the likelihood of something like sending me to. Like having me do online college. I wanted to do that. I wanted to, you know, follow my passion, which is filmmaking. And it's really been hard to get my foot in the door because my whole life I've just kind of been like, pulled off to a lot of different, you know.
Because you're doing Scientology. Yeah.
I mean,
on top
around.
On top of that, your child neglect, child abuse, religious abuse. I mean, you know, the list of traumas goes on for somebody in a cult.
Yeah, well, I'll get to that.
Whereas Scientology, they don't really raise their children. The cult raises the child. And what you're talking about is a CSW. You had to basically send in a formal request. No, I just want to show people how ridiculous this is. It's called completed staff work, and you would basically, if you wanted to go see, let's say, Mike's mother was dying when he was in the Sea Org, he would have to write a formal CSW, which basically says the situation, my mother's dying, then you have to write the data, my mother's dying, she's in Australia, I'd like to see her before she dies, solution, for me to fly to Australia to see my dying mother, I will make up the time by such and such and such and such, by doing these. I mean, I don't know when you'd make up the time, Mike, because you have signed a billion-year contract and you were giving all of your time, but you'd have to basically give up something to kiss their ass, to ask them for something like this, and then you'd have to give that to your senior, in this case, your mother, and Mike would have to give it to his superiors in Scientology, and they would either approve, and then at the bottom, you have to write approve or disapprove.
Yeah.
And that is what all Scientologists are required to do if they
want.
But the fact that you were asking your parents to get an education and you have to write a CSW. Anyway, go ahead.
Well,
sorry.
It's funny. I want to just say it because you said he'll Michael make up the time. I said, you can just give him, you can just put in the solution. I'll give you my 21-year LOA. The 21 years I have after I'm already dead.
Right.
Before we start this whole parade again.
Right, exactly. Because as a Sea Org member, you're allowed to take a leave of absence once you die. But you are required but you're required to come back 21 years later, of which L. Ron Hubbard, by the way, is how many years late, Mike?
Let me just do quick math.
Okay.
Around 10 now.
Yeah, because he's
14 or something.
Yeah, he hasn't reported back yet, everybody. Just breaking news.
Well, yeah, I mean,
he has not come back.
I'd hate to compare, you know, riding a Jaguar to pursuing universal enlightenment in the stars, but
right.
They don't really say where he went, or Target 2 or whatever that is, but
he is off some exploring
another planet. They yes. don't really, they're
doing
really
very important work.
Anymore.
You are, you, we are all on the pay me no mind list. We are not the people they're going to tell what the fuck L. Ron Hubbard is up to, but it's important shit. Just yeah. FYI.
Well,
fate of the universe.
Sure.
Correct. On what he's doing. Correct.
The next
correct.
And
Dylan, where are you at this point? Are you guys connecting up yet? Did you guys meet at Flag? Were you raised into Scientology or later?
So I got in a few years ago. I was never like raised in it. I just got in off a flyer on the street. One of the.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I'm serious. Back in 2016, I never heard of the church.
Take me.
Yes.
Yeah. Wait, you've never heard of Scientology?
Like. Bits and pieces before getting in. I heard like they believe in aliens or something weird.
And
like
you were
that.
Like, you were like, cool.
I was like, all right.
Like Dylan and I had the same conversation. I was like, you really never heard about it? He was like, no, I was just at the bus stop and I saw a flyer on the seat and I was like, yeah, okay.
What the flyer say?
It was one of the OCA personality test flyers.
Oh, and so it was like, yeah, okay.
Coming to the Church of Scientology. So I was like, okay. So this was February 2016.
Yeah.
I go in, they tell me that I'm like a terrible human being and that I'm going to like die in 3 months.
Sarcastically.
That's fair. Oh, okay.
Because my graph is like all low or whatever.
Everybody's graph is all over. But go ahead. Yeah, yeah.
Even the people who've done auditing for 10 years, their graph is low. But
Correct.
So I sign up for a course, one of those like little life improvement courses. I do it. I do two of them. And then I joined staff a month later because I was looking for work at the time.
Yeah.
Didn't pay well, but it was something to do at least.
Sure.
And so they started me off in HCO as the org receptionist for like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I told them I absolutely hated it.
Mm-hmm.
So then they put me to work in the central files that you guys mentioned earlier where like all the parishioners information is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And quite the upgrade, actually. I get to walk around
and write letters.
Yeah,
endlessly.
Yeah,
endlessly. Well, you do that as any post.
Yeah, right. Because everybody has a letter writing quota.
Quota, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
yeah. How are you? I see you wrote. You had purchased a Dianetics book in 1953. Everything okay?
I saw.
You
I,
ever
I,
come into the org?
I actually saw a letter one time as I was looking. I was getting ready to write another one. The previous letter to that folder had said, "Wow, Orlando, really? Come out and try Atlanta." They were literally throwing shit talking other orgs. Be like, "Oh, really? Both suck."
Well, that's
neither
because,
was doing a good
I know,
job.
But it's so funny. You know, they don't know what the other side of the letter writer. The letter writer is like 13.
Oh, this is a very old woman. I is definitely not the star letter writer of the org, winning no awards. But
no
yeah,
commendations for you. Sorry,
right.
No, not a single one.
Only KRs.
So you took a few courses. And you join staff. And then what happens?
Then, so we'll fast forward to November 2017. They were like, hey, you should train to be an auditor. And I was like, okay, sure. And so they were like, we want to send you to Flag.
So this is like they want you to be a counselor, quote unquote. Yeah. I use that very loosely.
Yep. Spiritual counselor.
Sure.
And
we want to send you to the Mecca.
They don't call it that anymore, but... it's not very commonly referred to that anymore. They just say Flag because it's brand. They have branding. They have like a merch store. Oh. They have a gift shop they have Flag water bottles. They have Flag, like everything is branded Flag.
Oh my God.
So they just try to get Flag in your mind.
Mike,
and it's the first thing that you see when you walk in to the FH now, the Fort Harrison Hotel. You take a right and the Lemon Tree. Remember where that restaurant was?
Yeah, I used to steal fruit from there. Yeah.
Yeah. You walk in. And it is just, it's basically like a,
if somebody doesn't send us some Flag merch, Mike, I'm going to be very upset. It's open to the public. People in Clearwater could go buy us some merch and send it to us. I would love to walk around with a Flag water bottle. a fucking flag sweatshirt? Are you kidding me?
Oh, that would be lovely.
the biggest fuck you that
I think that would be pretty cool.
All right,
I'll see if I can find a friend in Clearwater that can
Please, it's open to the public. For God's sake, it's a church.
They're going to have a checkpoint at that gift shop now and be like, get on the camp. Are you here to buy merchandise for various purposes?
For render remedy. For render remedy.
Are you a friend
By the way, the reason that they do not use the Mecca of Technical Perfection anymore has to do with 9/11. The idea of equating Scientology with Islam in any way, shape, or form went way out the window. Oh, no more. We're not doing that. That's not a good brand.
Yeah.
But if the NOI wants to give money, sure.
Right. Sure. The NOI, that's just different.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so now you're at Flag. You go to Flag to train to be an auditor.
Yep, and that's where I met my boy here.
Yeah, okay. I had done courses. Like I went to these like awful private schools, all Scientology run, Applied Scholastics. I went to the summer for one summer. I went to this place called Chesapeake Academy, which doesn't even exist anymore. It was actually next door to a cement plant, mountains of grain and rock and cement dust flying right over. But they taught Way to Happiness and learning how to learn, which is a course that I was required to know verbatim. You know that you have to know the every indicator of the three barriers to study. Otherwise, you have to repeat the grade. I got it wrong. So I repeated the fourth grade.
So you weren't learning fractions? No, I was a child.
We had workbooks. Mm-hmm. The teachers were supervisors.
Yeah,
so
they weren't accredited teachers. And
they watched start the timer until you got to your target, and then they'd stop the timer, and then
And by the way, for children who have to study Scientology or study anything, I want you to know, what a traumatic, I mean, I can't even get Scientology, and I'm talking exes, I'm talking my assistant, I'm talking, you ask a Scientology person to read aloud and they start having heart palpitations. You are not, when you're learning Scientology, you are supervised. You're sitting in a room on, you know, with a big card table with other people around the table who are studying their own courses. And if you yawn, twitch, move, look up, you have a supervisor tapping you on the shoulder saying, come in the other room. You're not allowed to look up words you don't understand. Like, you cannot pass a word you don't understand. You are forced to look up every single word and its derivations. It is probably the most traumatic thing when it comes to study. Like, well, education is,
when you look into, I took an interest, a very deep fascination into understanding how Scientology as a whole is a workable system, because I was in it and I'm here, I'm going to find out how I'm going to but that wasn't until I was about 17 and I actually I went to Atlanta and I was on staff, and I was there, I was the staff section officer for 7 months, which just means I was in charge of all the staff processing and training and auditing, processing, very scary term if you're not in Scientology, but if you're in Scientology, it's, you know, it's very different. You don't say processing to people who aren't in Scientology.
Right.
And I have a weird memory. Like, I'll remember, like, you can show me one frame of any movie I've ever seen and I'll tell you exactly what movie it is. Like, I have a very sort of reflexive memory.
Sure.
And with Scientology, that made me very popular because
you could memorize.
It's very good in HGC, the place where all the auditing gets done. There's the infamous laws of listing and nulling verbatim, which I did in 2 hours and 59 minutes, which I believe was a record.
And now these are just drills that you have to learn in Scientology.
You have to recite. Yeah. So there's,
and how many are there?
Well, I think there's like 21, 22.
21, and you have to learn it verbatim. So you are sitting across a wall, your chair facing a wall with the thing in your lap, the listing and nulling, thing in your lap, and you are literally just talking to a fucking wall. Once you get it, you then have to do it in front of somebody exactly verbatim, or you have to do it again.
Well, yeah, you just call them over. They have these massive practical course rooms at Flag specifically. And you know, you can do a lot of, you can get through a lot of check sheet items, like a lot of steps on your course in one course room. So they kind of just like send you back and forth and sure. They separated the check sheets into two sections. So it's like very like you're moving so fast that mm-hmm. you don't really have time to slow down. But yeah. By the time I got to Flag, they were just like, I think I was already a New Era Dynetics drug rundown completion, which is just under clear. Mm-hmm. That's the wobbly part where everyone's mm-hmm. like, will he, won't he? And so I was my executive director of my org came into my office. She sat down, beaming smile on her face. And I was like, it's no one smiles here. I don't know. Right, right. Like not when the doors are closed,
right. Right.
You know, not when there's not a public to please. Everyone's like, oh, yeah. Fuck, how am I going to get this? You know, you find $3,000 by tomorrow night. And
right. I'm 2 p.m. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So, so I was, you know, she was like, you're going to go to Flag, or I wanted to know if you would be interested in going to Flag to train as a clear certainty rundown auditor, which is somebody who is trained to
validate
the state of clear. Yeah. So I could technically audit a person from nothing to clear
right.
straight through. Right. And other things are needed, but yeah. I was just the one, I was the only like able-bodied young, you know, not completely drained.
Nuts. Yes.
Yeah. Not completely like blank behind the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And so they sent me and I, they said, oh, it'll be simple. It'll be like 6 months tops.
Mm-hmm.
I was there for 11 months, mm-hmm. Almost a year, 365.
Yeah.
Every day is mm-hmm. essentially what I meant, but I realized it wasn't exactly 12 months, but yeah. So every day. And then that is where, Dylan and I met, and we were both just sort of, oh, hey, you know, this seems like we were just, it just kind of seems like there was so much going on, and we were mm-hmm. the only ones who weren't like,
manic.
I need to find a PC or my life's going to end. And, oh, if I don't find a PC, then the senior CS is going to, you know, it's like,
we weren't trained yet. We just met during a dinner.
I remember freaking out. Grade zero is when you first, the grade zero is an auditing action. And when you're training for it, that was the first time you have to deliver it on somebody else. So that's the first time you're in the chair in a classroom with a bunch of other people auditing someone. And I remember this super ironic moment. And I asked, well, what happens if I fuck up the pre-clear? Mm-hmm. And he said, there's nothing that you could do to this person that we can't undo.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was hilarious because there's a lot of things that they did that are undoable. Yeah. And it's, you know, I can laugh at it a lot, but it's seriously, it has realizing kind of that everything you based, like all the motivations that you're kind of just experiencing, and then you kind of move off of that as a child, you're kind of like sprung into action.
Sure.
I just like the other, like a week ago, months after all this had happened, I was watching something and there was this psychologist talking about trauma on the show. And I was realizing that like, because I had no other frame of reference, like I have no idea like what my actual personality is. I mean, I have ideas and I have motivations and I do things, but when you're in Scientology, the only thing that matters is Scientology. And you know that that's what other people are thinking, you know, it's the definition of a team. Know what everybody else is doing and thinking, even if everyone else is just depressed and lost and smiling through, you know, their teeth. But so it was just wax enthusiasm.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah.
So, you know, so we trained for roughly the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You were there longer. Because I left
13 months for me, right. So a little longer.
And then
what happened when you got back to your organization?
Oh, God. So for me, I got back to New York after training, and they're like, cool. And I only ever audited on a public, like a public Scientologist, a parishioner, 9 hours, mm-hmm. ever. Right. The rest of my auditing was on staff members that were like needed a correction or if they got sick or something like that.
And just to clarify, he was posted as an HGC auditor, which in Scientology, what that's supposed to mean is that you're in a different department. You only audit public people, but that means nothing when you're just sitting there.
Through the fucking door.
When nobody's there, you're that I had to do the exact same thing. I was the SSO, a staff section officer, turned into an HGC auditor. And when there were no people to audit for ever, they made me the SSO again. So they could order me.
Oh my God.
To audit staff members. Right. Because I was saying that's not my job.
Because
anymore.
That's all that was there. Right. Yeah. Right. There wasn't a whole lot of public running into any Scientology organization.
Ian, you were in Atlanta, and Dylan, you were in New York, correct?
Yep, that's
correct. And these two are, quote, ideal orgs.
Oh, yeah.
The big thing in Scientology, these magnificent buildings that they purchase with after fundraising for decades, and open these huge facilities that are literally empty.
$20 million, $30 million buildings. Getting money from parishioners, like Mike's saying, and also using their tax exempt money, they are doing that, like Mike is about to say, I think, under the guise of, we need these buildings, we need to put all these millions of dollars because the public, the overwhelming need for us,
millions,
to be here, which is why they have to, the reason why people have taxes is because they service a need, right, to the public.
Right. And the story that mm-hmm. is given to Scientologists and why you have to give money is because there is an overwhelming demand for Scientology from the outside world, and we have to fulfill that demand by providing these facilities and all these auditors so all these people can move up the bridge. And to the IRS and the government, they say, we have to collect this money and spend it on these buildings, which is a valid exempt purpose, because we have to provide these services to our parishioners. And it is all complete horseshit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's total and utter horseshit. And what's so fascinating is, Leah, this is the first people that we have spoken to who have been staff members in an ideal org.
Oh, not only that.
Ideal org.
You want a golden nugget. Being training for 11 months, I came in, we came into Flag while the Orlando guys were still training. They were just, this is insane, but like when the Orlando guys were training, and so they were like, they were rushing those guys through, and
with Detroit too.
Yeah, well, that Detroit's a shit show. That honestly, that is like the least organized organization. The people in there are just scary.
Yeah.
And anyway, but the funny thing was, once the Orlando people fired, or they completed their training, is what that means. They fire you back to your organization. You know, we were just going about our daily business back at Flag, just training, just doing our thing. And then people from Orlando started coming back, and we were like, what's happening? It's, oh, I'm just here for cramming, which is just means in Scientology. Yeah, you get corrected. Yeah. And I was like, okay, a weird post, you know, not a technical post like an auditor or, you know, a supervisor. It's,
but
you know,
what was the real reason?
Well, apparently, I mean, I can only say apparently because I wasn't there, but what happened was there was a mission in Orlando, which means that people from the senior echelons of Scientology were tasked to go to Orlando to set it up for, you know, to be as standard and just what LRH wants and to be perfect to, so that it launches. They have this whole production, this mm-hmm. whole video of how, like, step by step, all the things that they do to launch an ideal org successfully. Mm-hmm. And it sounds, I mean, it's like, it's not a bad plan mm-hmm. If they ever followed it, but
good in writing.
Oh, it's great on paper. Yeah. Scientology, great on paper. That should be its tagline.
Yeah.
But you know, so we were asking them why, and apparently Orlando, the mission there had started doing this thing that missions are famous for, where they sell all the staff members as these huge packages. They get these very influential Sea Org members to come to events, and they sell everyone in the field these enormous packages. They open credit card accounts. They talk to your bank for you. They'll borrow money from other people. They'll take money from folders that from old, like the money, quote unquote, is already paid. Account. But yeah. On account, it's noted in your folder, in your PC folder, your most recent one. So that when you open it, you're like, okay, this is how many hours of they have left. It's pretty simple. But if somebody's not coming in and you know they're not coming in and you're kind of like, oh, well, I don't want to call this guy, you know, but he has like six hours on account. We're going to do something called an FES, a folder error summary, where I go in with these pink sheets. I never did this. This was, I as an auditor, you know, the auditor goes in and, you know, looks through everything and corrects it. And you could have these pink sheets like the size of the folder itself. I've seen whole folders full of pink sheets, meaning that all of their Scientology history was looked at and corrected. Either way, they take these hours and they give it to other people. And then when that person ends up coming back, they're like, oh, well, you actually don't have anything on account. We'll give you a free session.
So they're basically stealing people's hours, giving it to the person who needed to get fixed.
Something called the VSD, the VSD drill, which is an interesting one, which is stands for value of services delivered, which is a statistic that is very, it's almost the second most important statistic in an organization, next to general income. And basically what, at least I knew Atlanta used to do, the mission that was in Atlanta, they used to go down and they used to just do that on all the folder, on all the folders. They would look at it and they would just count it. Oh yeah, that was 3 hours. We can count this, this block that they paid for as completely done in full. Right. Now that those hours ran out.
So they're basically stealing hours from parishioners to give to their staff members. But so what happened? So when you were seeing this, cause I'm looking for the thing, like, so what was the thing? Cause there's so many things about science that's insane. It's not, we would need a day,
right?
But take me to what happens, how you guys decide this is it.
Well, just
this is bullshit.
Just real quickly to go back to the Orlando thing, because I trailed off there. No one at Orlando for I think about a year and some change were getting paid anything,
right?
Because they tanked. None of the staff were getting paid at all.
But because nobody's there, honey.
Yeah, well, not only
nobody's
that,
they, coming in.
But that was their fault. They didn't do their whole magic presentation where they, you know, they start campaigning and rainbows and butterflies.
No, honey. No.
They fucked it up.
No. There's nothing to fuck up. Scientology is fucked up and it doesn't produce results in people, or people would be coming in.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Correct.
Nobody applied Scientology wrong. People have been applying Scientology exactly correctly since
what you're saying.
Inception.
Okay.
Nobody was doing anything wrong. Okay, they were applying Scientology exactly the right way.
I try not to victimize people who or vilify people who were sort of caught in the crossfire situationally. Mm-hmm. The Sea Org members in those situations, I believe, were completely responsible for the whatever horrible conditions those staff members were trying to get out of. Uh-huh. Is what I mean is more less like, oh well, if you follow the rules, everything works fine. It doesn't. Yeah. The whole structure of the science of Scientology, if you would, is a loop, a looping paradox that just doesn't end.
It doesn't, because it doesn't work, because it's insane. Yeah.
Well, if it worked, then you'd see OT-10s running around.
If it doesn't exist. If it worked.
Ascending, like drip, like walking, floating through the streets.
L. Ron Hubbard would have reported already.
Halos.
People who have passed away would have reported to their local church of Scientology going, hi, my last lifetime, my name was such and such. I'd like to pick up where I left off. They would be able to listen, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And people who are reaching OT8 are going, this shit was bullshit. I spent my whole life doing this. I don't have the powers you claimed I was going to have. Nobody's returning back to their mothers and fathers going, hey, I was your kid last lifetime and I died early. You know what I mean? Like, that's just never happened.
You hear about it. You don't see it.
No, you don't hear about it. I've never heard it.
The fact of the matter is, if Scientology worked, it would be bigger and more successful than Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it is offering a cure for all disease, all mental illness, all physical conditions, all emotional conditions, everything that anybody on planet Earth wants, Scientology says it provides, and says that we have the only technology to provide all that. Now, if that was really true, and it did truly bring everybody happiness and cured their cancer and got rid and improved their eyesight and did all of these things, you can imagine how successful, popular, and absolutely rolling in fucking money it would be.
Yeah.
The only thing Scientology actually has is that it's rolling in fucking money, because it tells people that all of these things are going to be possible or will be provided, and then convinces them when that doesn't happen that it's their fault.
Well, let me tell you, you know how they make up for that? They give you new Purif uniforms, and they give you these really soft shirts sometimes if you donate, and they give you pens. Ooh, anybody want pens? Maybe sunglasses.
That sounds pretty good. Not gonna.
Yeah.
Lie. Well, the reason why people.
I'm not making fun of the fundraising.
Yeah. I know.
It is a huge control factor.
Of course, it's brainwashing. It's
the deprivation of someone's need to be, and telling them they are instead.
Yes. So take me through what was the departure? What was the thing for the both of you, and has since you're now being public, you've gone public.
Yeah. Dylan, I guess you can go first. Mine's a little longer, so I'll just let you go first.
Yeah, the thing that made me realize I was like very angry and pissed off. First of all, I'd like to mention I've never been more miserable in my entire life than when I was on staff at the New York org, that fucking shithole that it is.
Yeah.
Just needed to get that off my chest.
Oh, I understand.
It actually boiled down to a single conversation, which made me print up my routing forms to leave staff and eventually, go off lines completely. Routing form, by the way, is a series of, it's physical paper, and you follow a set of steps written on it to, do a certain thing, such as get someone onto a course, or, in my case, leave staff. Mm-hmm. And so one morning I came in the previous day I was told I need to go to cramming for whatever correction. So I came into the org that day. This was in October of 2019. And they're like, okay, cool. You're ready to go into cramming. And I was like, well, I didn't eat any breakfast, and you need to eat food to go on any sort of metered action where you're on the cans. Or else it just doesn't go well.
This is the Scientology lie detector.
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. And so I told that to this person who's posted as what's called the OES, org exec secretary, which is she's above divisions 4 and
it doesn't
5.
Matter. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. 5, 6.
Yeah.
But she's over all like the technical stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I told her that and she just started like mouthing off at me like crazy, like, you know, why would you do that? You're so fucking irresponsible. She's just being a bitch to me for no reason. And I'm sitting here like, well, we don't make an income. Like, my pay is so laughable. I can't afford breakfast.
Yeah, and by the way,
my dad cooks me dinner.
What were you being paid while on staff?
Anywhere from like $20 a week to like 150 at them on like a really good week. $150.
So you're not even able to support yourself.
No.
Working for Scientology, because I want to make people understand this is not the C organization. You are a parishioner working like a day job in Scientology.
If you were a C org member, you'd be guaranteed a flat rate if you were in the C org.
Well,
but
no,
as
in the
a
C
staff
org,
member.
Yeah, you get $40-$50 a week, but you're working all day.
As a staff member, yeah, you're not guaranteed anything.
You don't get food, you don't get room and board, and you don't get beatings. But you don't have, you cannot sustain yourself. You cannot support yourself, right? You're not supporting yourself at this point, right?
Exactly.
Obviously,
right. Okay. I was living with my dad.
And what does your dad think of this Scientology career you've chosen?
Oh, he's glad that I'm out now. You know, he never gave me any lip about it. My other family members did, like my mom and my brother.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm out, he's like, yeah, it's good that you're out. You know, you could actually do something with your life now. Have a real job.
Right, right. So you're making, at best, $100 a week working day and night, probably, right?
Yeah, it's best to afford food for, like, you know, maybe a few days.
Sure.
And then,
So this person's giving you crap, and you're like, "Listen, right. This is not worth all of this." And that led to,
I didn't even answer her. Like, I just stormed out of the room. I cooled off for a second, and then I was like, "You know what? Fuck this shit. I'm done." I was miserable for months leading up to this.
Yeah, so during that time, he had been telling me, like, we were talking, and he was the only real friend I connected with. And who we stayed like really tight. Mm-hmm. And through that whole time, I mean, there was no shortage of like people either yelling at him or, you know, putting him on things that wasn't his job because they wouldn't let him do his job. So his stats were
low. Well, it didn't matter really about.
Yeah, there's no
job.
To do.
There's no real people. These are fake statistics. By graphs, by a predetermined Thursday before 2.
Right, but the construct still exists for those people who are trapped. I mean, that's why people stay, is for the structure. So if you don't, if you can have a structure that makes no sense, but give no one any time to really look at it, even withhold information, you're not allowed to know if this is the religion for you until you've reached, you know, we won't prove in quotes to you that this religion is workable until you meet our requirements.
Donated.
Which is not at all an easy task for anyone who isn't like a complete robot yes man.
Mm-hmm.
Just yes, I'll do this. Yes, I'll do this. Yes, put me here. Those people are controlled. If you're a good Scientologist, you just go where people tell you to go and do what they tell you to do.
The moment you start questioning is when they like single you out, and that's what was happening to me for a while. I started noticing all these like things that were wrong, and I would voice it. And what ended up happening was right around that time, they decided we're going to give this guy a committee of evidence, which is a very stiff ethics action against me. They did that to me twice, actually.
It's a justice action taken against you. They're saying you're bad. We found evidence that you're bad, and now you have to prove to us that you're not bad. And what were the findings?
It was just a bunch of like BS little things. I honestly can't even recall it that well.
No, it's fine. What did you have to do? Did anything come out of this committee of evidence?
Yeah, they wanted me to redo all the tests for the technical courses that I completed during my training.
Yeah.
And they wanted me to do 50 hours of physical work which is when I really started to just like, I started showing up to the org less. I started showing up in my uniforms. I would miss some days. And then they decided to come at me a second time because they were thinking that I'm blowing, which,
Right.
yeah, I eventually did.
Yeah. So you
Yeah.
just ended up just
And
saying, this is just not for me.
yeah, because they ended up like with this whole COMEV situation, they simply said, okay, he's in an area where the org is failing. I mean, the whole organization is failing, but he's in a crucial area. So let's use him as a scapegoat to explain why this fucking shithole can't make any money and get any people to audit. And so I was the only person that was ever looked at like with that kind of justice. And now that I left, I'm sure they're still having the same, if not worse,
Of
problems.
course.
Yeah.
And so but you went on with your life, right?
Yeah.
Yes,
Yeah.
you're without Scientology, you're not dying.
No, yeah.
You're
Healthy as a bird. I
I'm sure
got
your
health
life is
insurance for the
I'm sure your
first time
life
in my
is
life.
have improved exactly. You're not homeless.
Yeah, I'm
Yeah.
making 19.50 an hour at my current job, which is better than like, $100 a week. So
That is math.
Amazing.
That is good math.
No, congrat. Listen, congratulations, because
Yeah.
it's not easy in any. I mean, people without this have a hard time getting on their feet, right? And building a life for themselves. For so that you got out soon enough before you destroyed your whole life is
Yeah.
commendable.
They should have valued him more in their little universe because he's playing the part and he's doing the things and
Well,
he
thank God
was
they didn't.
been
Completely
commended.
loyal.
He was
Thank
completely.
God that he didn't. Yes, thank God that
Oh.
they didn't. Yes, thank
Well,
God.
I often say, Ian, that the one thing that the one skill that Scientology has perfected is making enemies.
Yes.
They are masters at making enemies that they didn't need to make.
At all. They
So
seek them out.
let's yeah, exactly. So let's hear your version now, Ian.
Yeah, mine's a little bit more loaded. I'll put it in little parts, and you can kind of just like let me know if there's anything else you want to know about that specific part. Basically, I got back into Scientology, right? I was young, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna try this one thing and see if it works. I didn't really hate it. I thought it was a little silly, but I really didn't know enough about it. I just knew like the extremes that people say about it. Vague stuff, and then what my parents say about it, and the beady-eyed kind of like, it's the best thing you've ever seen in your life, and it's the best thing you'll ever do for yourself, and the best gift to give yourself is an e-meter, blah blah blah, all that bullshit. But I was like over it until I was in a really rough place, and so two people that I knew from the org in DC came to my house. To recover me or to, get money from my family. I was like, sure, I'll do a life repair. This is a very simple auditing action. And I felt a little better for that action. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna do, because I haven't been vocal about my problems. I'm not a very social butterfly, so to speak. So I repressed a lot of stuff. And yeah, if you put me in a private room and say, hey, tell me what's been going on, and I won't judge you, and I won't, blah blah blah. It sounds appealing, and for small things like that, I found it useful at the time. So fast forward, I'm gung ho. I'm more of a public at Flag, and then I go to Atlanta, and then I join staff, and then later right, I go to Flag. The day I arrived, you have to wait in HCO. And I know it's been a while, but this waiting at Flag when you have to do any kind of, I'm gonna use those words. If you have to go anywhere, or if you have to sign in, basically, to I've arrived at Flag, and you have this whole list of stuff that you have to do. You get different ones for different reasons you're there. I was there to train. So I did not know that I was basically signing off that I am now lower than dog shit. I am now like
As
less
an
than
out-org
human.
trainee,
As an
yeah.
out-org trainee, it's like it's the VIPs, the public, the Sea Org members, 20 miles of shit, and then
us.
Yeah. In their priority of who do we need to impress. So I got there, Dylan and I clicked pretty quick because we were just making light of this really intense situation. We were the only people sort of level-headed there. I was more interested in, I was going through just a lot and I wanted to get more auditing. That didn't happen.
You didn't get the help that you felt you needed.
Not initially. No. Uh-huh. Okay. And so then we get into there was this girl who I was training with, and she and I became like friends. Like there's not too many people to talk to, and most of them are Italian or Russian. Just like you turn your head and there's another Italian and another Russian. That's the only people who stay at Flag. Basically we became friends, and because there's like this whole problem, quote unquote problem, that Flag has of out of org trainees who hook up, who get into relationships, and then this somehow magically causes them to leave Scientology. Mm-hmm. And Flag forever. That's just the why, and you're not really told too much after that. Mm-hmm. But you just don't. I wasn't there. I wasn't interested. I just made a new friend, and then somebody saw that we were talking for a little too long, and so they wrote this report. And then it was just a fact for everyone that her and I had been, you know, 2D flowing, or you know, creating a relationship, and basically is what they call it. You know, because the second dynamic is
that's okay.
You know,
you're not allowed to not allowed to have relationship. Basically,
we're not allowed to have relationships. Uh-huh. And then this girl and I, we didn't flirt. Everyone said that we were dating.
It doesn't matter. What does it matter? That's the question.
Because I got stacks of reports. I got COMEVs. I got interrogatories on me.
So you got in trouble.
Through hundreds of people in the org. I was degraded on a daily basis. I finished my class 4 course, and that night I was made to shovel shit at the motels.
Because you supposedly flirted?
Yeah, because I had feelings.
Well, you were out ethics.
I was an SP, clearly.
Okay, hang on. Just so people understand, are you not allowed to have a relationship when you're a parishioner, even on staff?
Oh no, I was giving you the bullet points. That's why I was going fast.
No, on staff,
when you go to Flag as a trainee, if two people come to one org to train, mm-hmm. they can't. If they're from different orgs, they can't. They have to either leave, get together,
I don't understand
join
that.
The same org, and
because
go back.
The org is paying for their person. Yeah. So one or the other of those two orgs. Is going to miss out on getting their person back. Yeah. Because if they hook up, they're going to go to Sydney, and one of them came from Atlanta. Yeah.
So they only care about the fact that they might fall in love.
They only care about the fact that they're going to lose a staff member that they paid for.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right.
That's the entire rationale of this.
That's what I was trying to understand, because I never heard of a staff member being
reprimanded. Out-of-org students, just as Ian says, out-of-org students at Flag are the bottom of the shit barrel, and they are not allowed to do anything, and they get treated like dirt, even in the world of Scientology dirt.
Gotcha.
So true.
Okay.
So you don't even look at certain Sea Org members, like the RTC reps, who when they walk around in those vests, you don't even look at them because you're afraid.
Those are Sea Org members in a higher in David Miscavige's organization.
Yeah. They never smile. Let me tell you.
No.
Click.
Yeah. No, I get that part.
So basically,
we're talking about staff members.
I think it only really applies to training or breaking your contract or with that org. Right.
So I get into
like some ethics trouble. My stats were always up. I always did my work. I didn't break. That was the only rule I broke, but I was in ethics for 6 months.
Right.
And then just to be kicked out, I was like allowed to date her after a point. And then so she came back somehow. And then, so we both got kicked off the program. And then this whole experience had bonded us so uniquely that we ended up actually getting together where we wouldn't have if they had just
left you alone.
Let me fucking do my
course. Let me have a damn friend. Yeah.
Let me read this Scientology CS1 in goddamn peace, and you can keep your dreams for me and this woman to yourself, and I don't have to think about it.
Right, right.
You know, I was in a vulnerable place. Of course, I was gonna like, you know. But so we ended up getting married later, a year and a half or 2 years later, something like that, in October of 2019, and we got married in the Flag Chapel. It's a nice looking chapel, but it was, if I could go back, I'd probably do it somewhere else. The reason we did that, the reason she was from a different org on the other side of the planet, and I was from Atlanta. So we were going to meet at my parents' house, and they were going to pay for this big, nice wedding. And they were going to help her family come over. And instead, her family, because they were executives at the org, they didn't want to take too much time off to go to a big wedding. So if we could just have something like something quick, and we were like, no, we don't want to do this. And eventually we were like, fuck it, who gives a shit? It's just a wedding. And we went to Flag. They were on Zoom. Her family was on Zoom, probably on like just after post. And it was fine, you know. But then then I started doing Superpower, and that was another reason I had gone to Flag. So we both met at Flag. I was going to do Superpower, and we were going to get married, and it was going to be great. And then she was going to go back to where she's from, and then easy peasy. I started having these realizations in session where I, you know, maybe being on staff isn't like my main purpose in life. Maybe I want to be in, you know, I want to focus on movies and writing, and I have this like drive to do this thing, and it's never really felt right until right now. Mm-hmm. And after that session, I was
firestorm that started from that.
This was probably the start of the worst period of time in my entire life, where basically my auditor had written up. This is not some ethics confessional that I was in. This is just me. This is just, I just happened to say something.
Yeah.
And so they put me in a doubt condition, which just means that I have some confusion about who I am and where I belong. And I said, no, I don't feel like that's me at all.
Yeah.
I was told to stay at Flag while we figure this out.
Right.
I was there for 5 months.
Just because you had mentioned that maybe this wasn't your dream in life.
It gets better.
One little thing.
Yeah.
I was there. I was made to do amends to cover any future comments that I might have because of the situation. I was given a printed list of all the consequences that would occur if I were to leave staff. I was given, I talked to the...
What are the consequences?
Oh, my auditor would get justice.
In trouble.
In trouble. Uh-huh. I would get in trouble. I'd have the freeloader debt of over $70,000. I was already a class 5 auditor at this point.
So this is Scientology training.
This is
so you would be money. Basically you, even though you weren't getting paid, you, and by the way, a freeloader's debt is really just in
it's
your mind.
It's yeah, doesn't really exist. It's no money has changed hands.
That's what it's what they told you you needed to do the job that they weren't paying you for.
It's the value of what they think.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So yeah, so I would have to pay that back.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of back and forths, and they were like, oh, maybe we'll just transfer you, because they were asking me to be honest about how I was doing at Atlanta. And I was like, are you serious? You actually want to know? Oh, well, And I would say, well, it's awful and nobody's coming in. And they're like, they'd be like, okay, yeah. Like everybody knows. It's right. Just, you don't talk about it. You don't spread that, you know, little nugget of N theta.
It's a really big elephant in the room.
Yeah. And so so 5 months went by. I had become very depressed. I was staying in the Fort Harrison the entire time. So my parents had, it was $100 a night. So had spent more than the cost of Superpower just to stay there. You know, I mean, I was not allowed to, one of my best friends actually died, and I was not allowed to go to his funeral because that was another cycle that we didn't really want to start at that time. Apparently, that was my mom who said that when I asked her if she could help me. She said, "We don't really want to start anything new." I was like, "You know, it's not really something I planned to do, but it's something right. I would like to do a lot, and it just didn't happen." I actually blamed myself because I was the Scientologist who knew how to help this person, who knew how to prevent that. And I was sitting there doing this loss of person assist with my auditor and crying my eyes out. And she was just unflinching, just completely. She's like, "I would too." I mean, she didn't say that, but she had that look of like,
yeah,
like that makes sense to her.
Right. So, well, just so people understand this concept, this is a pretty bizarre idea that exists in Scientology, that you can, that anything that is like, if you're upset about something, that can be dealt with in auditing, right. That the loss of someone is simply a restimulation of your reactive mind. And right. That if you can locate the original incident on the chain, the first time that such an upset happened to you, you will be relieved of all this horrible mis-emotion, right. Wrong emotion, and you would just become happy and normal, and yeah. It won't affect you anymore. And that's what the idea is. And so you have people sitting there literally looking at you going, okay, well, you'll get over it as soon as we can find the first, yeah. The basic on the chain, you'll be fine. And
let's keep going a little bit longer.
It's like an alternate universe of, yeah. It's not just lack of sympathy or empathy. It's just like a bizarre world of there's nothing. There's just nothing here.
Yeah. You have to fill it with whatever you can come up with on the day, honestly. As a fully trained auditor and having actually like done that, I've, you know, pulled people's secrets out. I was trained to, I was good at it. And having pride in something like that, which if it's at the time, you know, is obviously for the benefit I was giving them at the time. That's what I was thinking. So right. I justified it pretty. I mean, that's all you do in Scientology is justify.
Right.
Everything. But so, you know, thinking back on things that I made people talk about and made people look at and in like mentally look at, confront without, I would say realistically, with the newest, even this golden age of tech phase two, which they just deleted a bunch of stuff from the old books and made it faster so people stopped complaining.
And streamlined all the procedures and everything.
Insanely fast. But you can finish AirC Straightwire in like an hour less. So they just made it, they just cut a bunch of fat and they released it. It's supposed to be like the new shit. It works effectively about 40% of the time. I'd say 40 is like optimistic. Because you kind of just agree that we've made a difference. You don't, it's not often that you see that sort of like spark ignite in a person when you're auditing them. So that was, but when you help them, you know, you grow bonds with people. it's easier to justify these whole, all these things. Having gotten
right.
as a child, I was told I should go to, my mom found a Victoria's Secret catalog under my bed when I was like 9. And so she said, well, that's degraded. We're going to send you to the org, and they'll fix you. Because if you, people who look at these kinds of images, which I guess she was just referring to porn, in her light way, she said, people who do this always, you know, become pedophiles.
Oh my
they
God.
Look
just
for
by looking at
yes, they look for more and more. And I mean, just the concept of like, if you find a girl attractive, you're going to turn into a pedophile if you think about it. And that terrified the shit out of me. I was like, you know, through as a like, if I was 12 and I was seeing a girl that I liked, I was like, oh, I can't talk to her because that's wrong.
Yeah.
And just, it's like a whole string of just tiny moments where I didn't realize until very recently that it's not just that I like have experienced like key traumatic events, is that I thought that my life was normal. My entire life, I thought it was just, you know, my mom would say, you know, you know, you're lucky you're here and not somewhere else. So you're always comparing it to like everybody else's life. And yeah, my life wasn't overtly dangerous, but it was.
Yeah.
Because I was in that household and I was like being exposed to all these things and I was completely unsupervised. It led to a lot of bad decisions on my part and also led to, you know, where we are today. I mean, I've lost
track. So what happened? Like, right. So you're 5 months at Flag.
Yeah,
and
so I decided at that point I was like, all right, fuck staff. I'm not going to be on staff anymore. This is like, I have a limit. I'm not going to do this anymore. Just send me home. Give me the routing form. I'm just going to go home. We're going to be fine. We'll find out how to pay off the freeloader. And it'll be fine. I just want to get the fuck out of here because I am depressed. And I started, I had a history of sort of suicidal thoughts. And these sort of came back up again during this situation. And so I would just be sitting in that hotel room doing nothing, waiting for them to either kick me out or do whatever, you know, and being like, I'm such a piece of shit that I can't even like at the most minuscule level impress these people. I will never satisfy this sort of endless hunger they have for responsibility taking, which makes no fucking sense.
That was a point I wanted to talk about real quick, actually. Yeah. It's always with the thing with Scientology, they take responsibility very seriously, and it's always up to the individual themselves. You're responsible for everything around you. So one thing I was going to say when you're talking about your friend is that you felt responsible, even though you were probably states away when it happened at the time.
100%. I didn't even know. I didn't even hear it from. I heard it from a friend. I was just doing my thing, and
but you blamed yourself. You
yeah. Well, I mean, if you read, you know, what is it, APNA? There's like a Advanced Procedures and Axiom. One of the books that you read. There's a reference called Full Responsibility, where it gives the most unrealistic expectation for not only a human but any living being that could ever exist. It's like, you are, if you don't think that you're responsible for some US soldier
the
in
bullet
the military
that hit the soldier
in Afghanistan, then you gotta think again, bud, because you know, it's a tough world. And it's like, not a single person have I met who has taken, you know, let alone enough responsibility for their own lives. I mean, in Scientology, in that, you know, sort of,
I never agreed with that shit, and that's probably why I had so much trouble with ethics.
Yeah, you were kind of a ticking
well,
time bomb.
It's why you're really here now and not still in New York Orc.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
So, Ian, so you're now like 5 months have gone by, and yeah. where does the end of this story come?
Oh, well, so I was getting these sort of, I wouldn't call them repair sessions. I'd call them maintenance sessions, where they would bring me in every day or every other day. And I would do a session, and they'd pull my withholds and see if I'd been doing anything wrong. They would, you know, in between those 2.5 days, they have to make sure that I'm not, you know, going off and committing crimes or whatever the fuck they thought I was doing in my hotel room. That is like, there's cameras all around that place. They'd know if I left.
Right.
So I, at the end, well, I wouldn't say it was the end, because I got one of these sessions and I said, yeah, I feel like shit being in there. I'm so excited to go home. You know, I thought I was going to, like, I was having some really dark thoughts there for a while. And I basically mentioned to them that I felt like such a burden that I had thought about taking my own life. And about
you were out of there the next day.
2 hours yep. after the session, someone came to my room and they were like, hey, so you're going home. Good right. news. You know, and they had to see security. And when I saw my ethics officer, the person who was handling me, they call him at Flag, they call him a master at arms, or an MAA, which is dumb, but she brings me into her office and she's like, so I see you had these thoughts. And I was like, so tell me about this. And I was like, I mean, yeah, it's pretty straightforward. She's like, have you been having these thoughts before? I'm like, have I not been saying that for years, that this is something that I struggled with? And they're like, oh, well, yeah, but we didn't think it was anything, like, we didn't think you were actually serious. And I was like, okay, well, can I go home? And they were like, yeah, you have to go to your hotel right now, pack up all your stuff, which is like 3 suitcases at that point. I think I was living out of the same suitcase. So it was like this suitcase and a box of stuff that I had accumulated over 5 months just to survive in this tiny place. And I, thankfully, I had a friend who lived in the area, and he let me stay with him for a few days. But what just amounted to, like, me going in every day, waiting 7 hours, and then being told to leave because they're not ready yet. Good time to kill podcasts, though. I got a lot of podcasts done in that time. It's pretty strong. Pretty strong me time in HCO, I'll tell you. So I got home. I went down to Atlanta, got all my stuff, went up to Virginia, where my parents lived. And I stayed there for a little bit. And then it was just because it was already touchy because I was off of this. Everyone thought it was like this really bad situation. You know, the family was in agreement that I had gotten, like, fucked over, essentially. And then I get a call about 2 days after this whole situation had been done. And I was, like, unpacking at my parents' house. And I was like, all right, cool. It was from my DFP, which is the director of processing, someone who oversees, like, my services, like, makes sure that I'm getting my services at an org. She calls me and she says, hey, the senior CS of Flag, who is, like, the top
technical
yeah. person on the, essentially, you know, on the planet, he reviewed my situation and he found that it should not have happened. At all.
Shocker.
I was like, no shit. This is not, it's a little not as cool as you're coming off, because you're just kind of telling me. It was a whole thing. I just decided to take a break from Scientology, and then I would just, you know, not do services anymore. And it felt so good.
And you weren't even, like, showing up to post anymore,
no.
right?
No, I had, well, I did the routing form. I went down to Atlanta, and when I got all my stuff, I, like, did a routing form, and I was like, I don't care what you want me to do. I'm going to fucking leave anyway. I did all the steps. Gotcha. Hasta la vista. And so I was out of there. And when I got up to, after that happened, basically, I had a lot of time to reflect, and I was just looking at, it shouldn't have happened. He saw that it shouldn't have happened. And I was just, you know, echoing all these different like things. And I started having these weird, started noticing things that just didn't seem right about, you know, Scientology. Not like I'd never had doubts, but I was just in a very weird place where I was like, I'm not doing services, but I'm, you know, I'm not looking at like the going clear. You know, Mike Rinder was a big person to avoid at the time. Mike and Leo were the devil, and they have what do they have? They had like, I mean, you've seen the websites. They promote those,
right?
You know, with the black and white and the boom boom, the you know,
they're Law and Order terrible SP, people.
Yeah, basically.
Don't ever talk to them.
It's such a but you find it. What I found out is that when I started telling people that I didn't want to do services anymore, I became, you know, how it's like us versus them. I became more so one of them, and my right. and my whole family, just the whole dynamic shifted. They were like obviously careful talking to me. They were like weirdly postured, and they would greet me in weird ways. They would offer me things that didn't make sense. You know,
almost as if they were, they
wouldn't
grilled the conversation.
Yeah. Or they hadn't like, they didn't really make a lot of, direct eye contact. And
yeah,
so
you know,
just,
Ian, they're afraid that final straw will break, and then that will be it. Because as soon as you step beyond a certain point, they have to, in like all good Scientologists, then they have to disconnect from you. Then they have to stop bad mouthing you. Then like all these things start happening. So they're like worried. Oh my God! If we push him and he says something that he can't take back and that we can't unhear,
it's gonna
end.
Be a problem for us.
Exactly.
It's gonna be our, oh, we're gonna have to deal with that. They're gonna pull us out. Well, what was crazy was so one of the things that like I saw that made no sense was that they the church emphatically states that, you know, the interview that they had with LRH was the only filmed interview.
Right.
How rare. And I never even thought of it. I never thought anything of it. It wasn't even something I considered until I started. I was like, I had this secret with myself. I was like, I'm never actually going back. This isn't a break. Fuck that. I can't take this anymore.
You're done.
I had the first private thought I had in almost 7 years, and I had never felt more excited. Imagine just having a thought, you know, no one else will hear.
Right.
And that excites you. It's like, what kind of 1984 fucking shit is this? So I started, you know, I saw that there was another interview, and I was like, what a stupid fucking thing to lie about. And then I was, it started causing problems in my marriage because she kept wanting to, she pretended like everything was fine. And that there was no problem, and that it wouldn't be an issue if I left Scientology, because, you know, you can have a life and just not be critical of Scientology and not be a Scientologist. It's really perfectly fine. But what that meant to me is like, I'm going to watch you like climb this ladder in this group that literally ruined my life.
Right.
And gives and doesn't offer reparations for damages done. Ever. It wants your money, and it's not really interested in giving you money or time or anything you actually need. It decides what you need.
Either.
Yeah, exactly. So I ended up, we would have these fights, and I tell her how upset I was and how hard it was going to be to continue, and to like, I was like worried about all this stuff, and like, what if they just declare me an SP? Oh, that can happen so quick. I was terrified. And it was just in one ear and out the other. And then it eventually culminated to an argument where I asked her if she would choose the church over me. And she said, yes. And that was when I asked for the divorce, which was not easy. I'm 25. I have no fucking idea how to do a divorce. I'm working it out. I have some ideas on how it's going to, like, I'm working on that's its own thing, but it's and then I got really low and I posted a video of sort of, I was either going to do something extreme to set myself free from this like story that I have like caked in my head that I'm locked, you know, I'm locked up in this like prison essentially where I can't talk to anyone about anything. It was just, I was getting lower and lower and lower and lower and lower. And so, you know, so I made a video, kind of killing two birds with one stone. My father and I do not have a good past. It just kind of seemed like the perfect angle to kind of get these frustrations out and also like tell people something they didn't already know. Right. That caused a problem I wasn't expecting, which is now I have the cult of keto people attacking me because I'm attacking Dr. Berg, which you can eat whatever you want. That wasn't really the point. I was just that he donates millions of dollars to Scientology, and that, and if you're buying, you know, you're indirectly donating to Scientology. There's a guaranteed paycheck going to Scientology.
Right.
From these sales. So when I posted the video, I was like, no one's going to see this. I've been so out of the limelight my entire life. And a few people saw it. I'd say about 6.8 million people at this point. And, you know, every social media, all my DMs are full of these people who are sending me, you know, things that are really great and things that are really like weird and scary. And, you know, it's been very overwhelming and very, and now that I've come to terms with the, you know, the public aspect of it, I'm kind of just figuring out how to communicate it in the right way. And also the negative side effects of leaving Scientology and realizing, and now having an interest in like, okay, well, what don't I know about what I was taught my whole life, you know? And like, I'm not like, wasn't like a sheltered hermit. Like I know stuff, but the, you know, human stuff, now humans act.
It's still a lot to sift through though, for sure.
Yeah. And I realized, you know, there's that Scientology filter. There's that, don't be J&D. There's that, we'll think of this first. Oh, think of Scientology. Think of Scientology just before you,
And for someone like you and me, Ian, honestly, it takes a while to figure out what is and isn't the Scientology filter. That may be the hardest thing of all. Like, is this my Scientology education, inculcation, or is this actual reality?
And it's insane. It's almost like, you know, you're just riding an avalanche down to the bottom of the ocean. You're kind of just like picking one piece. You're like, I wonder if, because I was taught this piece of Scientology, if that influenced my direction towards this opinion, and which framed this. I mean, my dad, up until a few years ago, I realized that this had such an insane effect, because I knew that Scientology had a negative opinion on gay people. One of my friends, another one of my best friends, came out as gay when I was young, and my parents were like, oh, and I was like, I had always heard that that's like aberrated.
Right.
And you know, after I, you know, grew up and was like, oh, they're just people. Like, your people are people, and they can do whatever, they can be interested in whatever they want. There was still that voice in my head that's like, you know what L. Ron Hubbard says about that? You know that they're one, right? You know that there's an aberration or some reaction. But
they're,
I'm like,
conniving.
Yeah.
But exactly.
They're not.
It's
just regular,
it's like
people.
Sewn into the fabric of my head. So right. It's not improved. But I am receiving a lot of well wishes. I really wish I had the energy to respond to everybody. A lot of people telling me to join other religions or just right off the bat, which is always fun. I probably won't I'm going to take a break. I'm going to take the next billion years. I'll to decide whether or not this Yorg is right for me.
That's funny. Well, I honestly, guys, it's been fascinating to hear your story and your perspective on this, because like I said earlier, we haven't spoken to anybody who so recently was a staff member in a Scientology organization. And that's right. Fascinating information. Just people are always interested to hear about that. But your personal stories are pretty incredible. And, you know, the good thing is, you know that you're now not going back and not going to get worse and are not going to get any more indoctrination, and you're not going to have any more bullshit piled on your front door, at least from Scientology. So that's exactly. The good side of life.
Just even after it, you know, because I was like super paranoid when it started to blow up and my family was freaking out and they said a lot of really unkind things about it. But so we're not on speaking terms clearly, but I was really paranoid, and I was like, every little tiny thing, I was like, oh, there's a magazine, or there's like a Freedom magazine, and oh, that's probably has some thing in it that they're going to listen to me, or there's a car that's been parked out across the street, and it's like,
right,
they create this, you know, we know everything about you, and we want to help you see the truth.
And but if you don't, we hold it over your head.
If you don't, then we're gonna have some words. Is what we're gonna go out back and
they become public,
right?
Make my
all your dark secrets.
Jesus Christ! I mean, it's just gonna be nonsense. Have you ever? How hard is it to read a PC folder? It's hard. Have you ever tried to read a PC folder? Auditors have terrible handwriting.
Yep.
No. Yeah. I just got like, even as like from a personal perspective, I just wanted like, I don't blame people for becoming Scientologists, because I know what I was looking for when I got into it. I know what it costs, and I'm sure for some people that's, you know, being just a drone and almost situationally indentured to a group whose goal is literally saving the universe from
extinction,
slavery, and all, like just you know, all, like as if there's just going to be the fucking invader force that comes out of the clouds and just we should have listened to Ron. It doesn't work like that. It's we live in the real world, and I've never seen anything that has concretely proven half the shit that he says. I mean, what, like when you're auditing, you're seeing things. So, I mean, for some people, you know, see things and it's hard to explain. So you just make up a reason, but this is like dangerous, dangerous stuff you're messing with. You're allowing someone to print how you should be onto your brain, onto your mind, essentially voluntarily. You're only allowed in if you can't do it, if you're not volunteering yourself. You can't do it if you don't want to do it. You have to be there, pay for it, get in, and it looks a lot nicer in the beginning.
And you're not just Ian and Dylan anymore. You're Ian and Dylan the Scientologists.
Yeah, that's
it. Becomes your whole persona.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I mean,
exactly,
it's
right.
It's if I could get, if I could have a logical person understand, like a logical Scientologist, a person who has like, who wants to prove me wrong, use what I've said to try to like find out how Scientology fits together, they're going to see it doesn't work.
Right.
As a whole. And if somebody sees these holes and these gaps, or if you feel like shit all the time, maybe you shouldn't be in this. Maybe you shouldn't be there. That's what I learned. You cut the fat really quick.
Yep. Well, a logical Scientologist is an oxymoron. You cannot be both. You cannot be a Scientologist and logical. It's just not possible, because there's a lot of illogic in Scientology.
Those people are in ethics.
Right.
Or here.
Well, we want to thank you for once again, all the work that you do, for continuing to want to speak out.
both of you, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. We really appreciate it. And honestly, I believe that discussions like this are going to help a lot of other people. And that's why we do this program. I know that that's why you came on to participate in it today. So thank you so much. And
anytime.
We wish you nothing but the best.
It was a real pleasure and an honor to speak to all of you. And if we can just get one person out or prevent one person from going in with this, that's more than enough for me.
Great.
You're welcome. I know I was a valuable guest. Anyway, I'm joking. Every step of like, oh, maybe I'll talk to this person about my story. It's just been very scary. And it will never stop. I don't think it'll ever stop feeling scary until I'm doing it often. But just because something terrifies you, you know, if you feel like it's right, it's follow your gut. You're wasting your life if you're just, you know, doing otherwise.
Definitely.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. Until next time. Bye, Mikey.
Bye, guys.
Take care.
Bye, Hannah.